Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
Episode 213 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Ew.
Do you remember when I promised, I think it was a couple weeks ago now, that maybe it was just like last episode, but we skipped a week, that I would come up with a whole new, you know, intro?
Whole new intro.
Yeah. Not yet.
Nope. I haven't actually been able to think about that because something happened to me the other day that I think might have ruined my life.
What was that?
I was on the internet minding my own business, and I read half a sentence of fanfic, and now everything is ruined for me because fanfic is not real fiction.
Don't leave the Twitter bullshit behind, sir. Leave it behind.
What Twitter bullshit? This is real life stuff that happened to me, and not bullshit that doesn't matter on Twitter at all.
Uh huh.
Sorry. Yeah. No. It's Twitter bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all know.
I love how you can like date our podcast by just like what happened on Twitter right before we recorded.
Yeah, because like I always do it. I always.
Oh yeah, no, it always makes you laugh, so I'm fine with this. God knows.
Well, that's good. I'm happy to hear it.
And you know, when historians dig up, try to figure out what happened with civilization, and all they have to go by is our podcast.
Oh,
they'll
nice.
They'll be able to recreate a timeline.
They'll be able to recreate Twitter just based on our podcast, and they'll be like,
right.
"Well, thank God we're long past all this."
Yeah, I mean, of course, if they did that, they'd be like, "Maybe we should dig up these historic artifacts, like Animal Hospital, and we will be weirdly responsible for the fall of another civilization." But
right,
that's future us's problem. We'll be long dead.
I mean, speaking of future us, just wait till we review Kitty Mamas.
Jesus Christ, I'm going to watch the shit out of that movie. I'm excited. I realized why I got so excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remembered that terrible Kevin Spacey cat movie that we didn't watch because fuck Kevin Spacey.
Right.
And I ended up not going to see it because I went and saw Suicide Squad instead, and I'm still not sure I made the right choice, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But then, you know, the whole Kevin Spacey thing happened, and I was like, I'm not going to give him new money. And that movie sounded terrible, and I feel like this is my emotional replacement for that movie.
But the weird thing
like
is
like, I've earned this movie somehow?
Exactly. But the weird thing, this is, okay, Kitty Mamas, for those who are listening, is a movie in which the premise is that a disgraced fertility doctor, played by Paul Hyun-Sung Lee, I think is his name, from Kim's Convenience.
Who we both love.
Oh yeah, he's great, like wonderful comic actor, good dude. Canadian, all the good things, is at a fertility clinic, and four women give birth to kittens.
Yeah,
that's the log line, and I'm but because it's Canadian, you don't know if it's going to be a goofy comedy or not. It might be a weirdly
well. It's supposed to be a mockumentary. Like a description I saw of it, because you can rent it on Vimeo of all places.
Okay, I was looking
January
for
19th.
It. Okay.
Yeah, January 19th, you can rent it on Vimeo. Always a good sign. Always a good sign.
Always.
But yeah, it's listed as a mockumentary, and I'm just like, that makes this even weirder.
Yes, it does.
So I am so in. Like, I don't even remember how much it was. I don't care if they're like, oh, it's, you know, you're going to spend $40 watching Kitty Mamas. I'd be like, fuck you, yes. Yes, I will. Let me take a look here. Yeah, if you just search for, like, Kitty Mamas streaming, you can go to Vimeo. Yeah, it's $12.99. You can pre-order it now. For $12.99, you can stream and download it.
Mm-hmm.
Or a $4.99 48-hour streaming rental period.
I'm kind of willing to pay that $12.99 just for the privilege of owning it.
It's an hour and 33 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's see. Would you like me to read out the official description?
Yes, please.
Okay. A disgraced but kind-hearted fertility doctor, Dr. William Hahn, embarks on a breakthrough clinical trial in which four women give birth to kittens. Sylvia wants a hypoallergenic family pet. Joan needs money to help pay for her law school dream. Maria wants to start an unconventional family with her fiancé. And Rose just loves cats so much. The cat pregnancies must remain secret for the duration of the trial, but when Dr. Teresa McKenzie walks back into Dr. Hahn's life and joins the clinical team of the trial, everything is threatened. Her jealous ex-husband stalks the clinic, hell-bent on exposing the trial and ruining Dr. Hahn's life again. Now William must open up about his past, come clean about his feelings for Teresa, and enlist the help of his four kitty mamas if he wants to bring the world's first truly hypoallergenic cats into the world. Yeah, this just gets weirder the more you find out.
So while you were giving that description, I pulled out my calculator and determined that if you pay the full price and download it, you are paying approximately 14 cents per minute to enjoy.
That's fair.
That seems worth it to me.
Also, the movie's official like little cute tag on the poster is "The Cat's Out of the Womb." Which it makes absolutely no sense.
No, that is an attempt at a joke that does not work. And I hope the rest of the movie is exactly like that.
Exactly. Like, this is all I want.
My God.
I want this thing to be like this weird mist that just like is so in love with itself that it's fantastic.
Yep. Now this feels so Canadian. Like a weird idea that somebody had and wouldn't let go of and eventually got, you know, some money from some government agencies to make a film, and there we go.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I love it.
who wouldn't?
Anyway, on to things we actually have gotten to see.
Right.
Discovery ended its third season.
Uh-huh. It did. With the original theme song at the very end to boot.
Yes. Yes, as it should have.
Yeah.
Also, I do think of kind of note, and it makes sense, is that we are finally keeping a showrunner for a second season.
That's something special for Star Trek Discovery, something new.
Right. But it also makes sense. Like, we're finally, like, staying in the same place for a minute. So.
Yes. Exactly. They won't be traveling through time. The finale? Yeah. Oh, I thought I loved it. It seemed to me to be some Star Wars at its Star Trek at its best.
I mean, from the little Kirk reference.
Mm-hmm. And the whole new
tagline. I admit I got like a little geek cheer out of the like I don't like it's a no-win scenario. I don't believe in those.
Nice.
And I was like, it's funny when she said that I was just like, oh, you're ending up with the captain soon, aren't you? Like it just. Yes.
Yeah, no.
It was a weird telegraph.
Yeah, she said that, and it was like, yeah, okay. I thought it was a shame that they have to move Saru off. Like, I don't know what they're going to do with Saru.
Well, he's not leaving the show at all. So it's one of these, like, I think he'll obviously still be there. He'll probably be the first in command and taking over for her occasionally type of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe? I don't know.
It's hard to say. I still did not, and there's still a part of that episode that I didn't enjoy, and it was the same stuff I didn't enjoy from a few episodes ago. Everything with Sokal and the holographic stuff, I was like, the one thing I did like was that you could see Gray, and that Adira and Gray got like, and people got to see Gray as well. And then they said, okay, we can work on having you sort of tangible. And I thought, good on you, because I did not want to watch another season of like invisible. You know, invisible trans boyfriend, basically.
Right.
So, I thought that's, you know, it's 2021. We can do this now.
Yeah, I mean, and once we're like, oh, okay, like, holographic tech will work, well, we know they'll have that, so we're fine.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's a good fix.
It is. I think it's pretty damn good. But you know, I
agree that was kind of the weakest of it.
That's okay.
Yeah, I think it was like a really good, fun, big, you know, pretty finale.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Lots of stuff, lots of action. They took care of the threat and they ended up putting Michael in some really unflattering captain's outfit. I don't know.
Really? I like the new uniform.
I looked at that, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I
love them, like, because they're kind of, they're this merge of eras. Like, A, they shifted to the next gen color scheme.
Yes.
Which I thought was a nice touch. It confused me for a minute, but I thought it was a nice touch.
Okay.
Well, just because I was so used to them using the original series color scheme for them.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like the shift. B, it's almost the same gray, and this has to be intentional, as the uniforms from the first, the motion picture.
Oh, okay. I didn't think about that.
And it has the kind of like, you know, shirt and pants construction of some of the older uniforms. So it's kind of this weird echo of a whole bunch of eras at once.
Mm-hmm. That,
and
no,
again, I think it fits that kind of exploring mission that, I mean, not that Discovery is that ship, but it kind of is now, that the later Star Trek had. Like, it's less action-y because we're in the future and this is not what we do, but it still enables it. And I just like the big, bold color stripe, whereas, like, Admirals just get piping colors.
That's true. I mean, I can't argue with anything that you're saying. I just did not think it looked that good.
Oh, I get it. I do. I understand. Like, the other ones are way more, like, flashy.
Mm-hmm.
And they are kind of cool. I love the color gray, so that helps.
Oh, there you go.
But I really do like the way it's, like, it feels almost more like a military organization, or a non-military organization, frankly. Where it's just, like, here's this uniform and just this big, bold color stripe to let you know, like, I don't know. I like the hell out of it.
I get what you're saying.
And I have a feeling they'll, like, quietly tweak it a little bit for the next season as well.
This is possible, yeah.
Like, they'll probably be, like, color stripes. Like, I would think, like, you want to, like, add, like, racing stripes on the pants in the same colors, maybe.
You know, but
And I'm sure there's, like, a shirt under it for, like, action scenes that looks cool.
Right. You know, I realized something, and there was an image I saw maybe on Twitter or something, you know, linking to an article about, you know, what's next for Star Trek, and it had like an image from Lower Decks, and then of the main character Beckett Mariner, and an image of Michael Burnham, and I realized that both are stories of, like, younger women of color coming up through the ranks, initially refusing to, like, take authority, you know, and responsibility, both dealing with domineering mothers for an entire season. And Michael's journey is just farther along than Beckett's. But I'm like, that's weird. It's kind of the same story.
I guess, in a sense, yeah. I also do like, by the way, the uniform shift. I mean, it would be the same kind of without it, but that when we have all three live action shows, all three will have different uniforms.
That's true.
Because, you know, I mean, well, and I mean, if we count Picard, four, we'll have completely different outfits.
Right.
Well, so you just be able to visually tell them apart, which is a really nice touch.
Man, I'm going to have to watch that Picard finale at some point.
I mean,
I don't have to.
No.
No, I guess I don't.
You're on your own. Like, I'll watch Kitty Mom and still be dumb, but, you know, Picard, right. That's a walk too far.
Yeah, fair enough. I understand. I completely. Although I did see a little summary, and it sounds, and basically it just sounds like everyone gets kind of a magic redo and threats are removed. It's like, oh, okay. So just
gotcha.
Whatever. Just clearing the decks for season two, I guess.
Oh, speaking of TV stuff, just because there isn't much of it, tonight, when we're recording on a Sunday, is the premiere of Batwoman.
Ooh. The Woman of Bats.
And then Thursday, I mean, there are other premieres like Riverdale and Nancy Drew and all that, but in terms of like what we probably will watch, Thursday will be the premiere of Walker.
Yes, I have to admit, I'm kind of curious.
Yep.
I mean, not that I would be, you know, not that I'm generally like, ooh, a show about a Texas Ranger, but yeah, it's got Jared Padalecki, and it's probably going to be a little more enlightened than the Chuck Norris version of same.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll probably be full of, like, heavy drama, you know, mm-hmm. but we'll see what happens. Yeah, and then, like, again, next Sunday there'll be more Batwoman. I think the week after that we start getting other shows back.
Right.
And we'll see, because, you know,
we should.
Filming stuff keeps starting and stopping, so who yeah, knows yeah. how this will go this year. Yeah.
Plague keeps on washing over productions like a tidal wave.
Yeah.
I was thinking, it occurred to me, actually, with the Batwoman, they've really missed an opportunity, and what it's one that I've brought up before. With Woman of Bats, they could have had like a bunch of bats pretending to be a woman, but instead they got a human.
I mean, do you know of the great? Okay, so I don't know if you've ever read. You've seen, of course, the Spider-Verse movie.
Yes, and we actually have talked about this before.
Yes. Okay, because so long as you know about Spider-Man, we're good.
That just sounds, I mean, I hate to say it, but that sounds like exactly like the kind of superhero I would come up with.
Oh, God, yes. Like, it's me too. Like, I'm just like, I love the idea so much.
Oh, yeah, Spider-Man is fantastic. When you told me about Spider-Man, I'm like, oh, how come I didn't get there first?
Right? Oh, so good.
Unlike discussing the first and last episode of various series, which I did get to first, until BuzzFeed took it. Now Alan Sepinwald took it. Jerks.
I mean, I do feel like it's one of those ideas that is easy to stumble on.
It is, yes. I mean, I won't say it's a grand intellectual.
But BuzzFeed does it terribly, and I'm pretty sure Sepinwald will do it better.
Probably. That will actually be an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's see what else was there. Oh, the first two episodes of WandaVision.
Yes. Oh, do you want to hear? Excuse me. Sorry, I have a theory about WandaVision.
I actually want to talk about theories about WandaVision. So go ahead.
Okay, my theory is that Wanda Maximoff mm-hmm. and Vision are actually actors. Played by Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany, and Disney is paying them to do it.
Huh.
No, bear with me. I know you're like, come on, Aiden, but if you watch the show really carefully, there's some clues. Like, if you watch right to the end, they go into, right. like, all these names being listed, and they have Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Bettany, Deborah Jo Rupp, Catherine Hahn. Who are these people? They're actors. Why would they have their names there if they weren't like what we're looking at? And if you look at pictures of Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen, they look suspiciously similar. I rest my case.
You've dropped out. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I don't think you've dropped off in your feed. I just like I lost like four words there.
I rest my case that Olsen and Bettany look exactly like Wanda and Vision. So I'm pretty sure Disney's pulling a fast one on us.
I think you're onto something there. No, what's funny is that, like, I mean, obviously the show is set up to be this big, you know, I don't think it's actually set up to be like a full big mystery. How many episodes is it? Do you know?
I honestly don't know. It's probably like 10.
But it can't be given the.
I am not sure.
I mean, just, I feel like given that it's only 30 minutes. I don't feel like... Oh, it's only going to have nine. Weird.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a big mystery, but it's also how long can they go on with it, right?
Right. I don't think they're going to be... Like, it doesn't seem... Frankly, I know there are details that we don't know yet, but based on the first two episodes, it doesn't seem like a huge mystery so far.
Exactly.
Like, we know that they're in a little warped reality or maybe a simulator... Perhaps Wanda has been sort of like imprisoned, but she has certain agency. Maybe it's all her own doing. We know that Sword is trying to break into this reality and is getting pushed out by Wanda, and so on and so forth. And I'm assuming it's because Vision is dead and she wants to like create this world in which she can actually live with Vision, and is creating sort of mediated realities in order to pull this off.
I kind of love how when they first like were like, the show's called WandaVision, we were all like, God, that's a terrible title. And now the title makes absolute sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, in the first place, it's Wanda and Vision, but in the next sense, I mean, there's obviously television, but it's also Wanda, like Vision as an object or creation of Wanda. And one that she's maintaining.
Right. Well, it's also her vision of reality.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But
here's the thing that I love is that, you know, we're two episodes into this like obvious like, you know, puzzle of things and what's real and what isn't and what's going on. And of course there are any number of websites and commenters that are just paid to deconstruct everything. And I'm like, you know, I made a conscious choice that I'm not gonna try to second guess this one.
Sure.
I'm not even gonna like think about any theories realistically. I'm just gonna be like, I'm just gonna watch it.
Sure.
I'm gonna let it unfold. I'm gonna let it do its thing.
Yep. The only theory that I think holds any water is the one that I laid out.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I totally agree, and I think it's more interesting just to like watch the show not for like all the puzzles, but to see just how they pull off like sitcom beats. And recreating,
but also turning it into like horror.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
You know, and like the camera shifts from three camera setups to like, you know, single camera,
right?
Handheld stuff and just little things like that. You know, like the wife of Vision's supposed boss when he's choking, going stop it,
yeah.
And changing the stop it from him to Wanda.
Yes, looking at Wanda and going stop it. Yes, exactly.
Like it's just such a subtle bit of work.
Mm-hmm.
All across the board. But yeah, I just want to like revel in what it is rather than talk about what it might be. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, because that kind of, I don't know, when you turn everything into like a puzzle to be solved, it's the curse of modern television, right? It's,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, like there's so many like Wanda and Vision stories between the Tom King thing, and I think in this case, actually more importantly, the Englehart miniseries
mm-hmm.
from back in the day
mm-hmm.
that obviously feed into this,
right?
That I'm like, and I know all these stories, and I could happily play the oh well, this is coming from this, and this is probably where they're going for that, and I'm like, sure, but when I was reading those stories, I wasn't playing that game, and I enjoyed them a lot, so why not let this tell its own thing? Just do what it wants.
Well, well put. Absolutely well put. And I'm enjoying seeing some more Marvel stuff. But I mean, frankly, over the last few years, I found Marvel stuff, you know, a little straightforward and disappointing. Like I remember in 2014, it felt like they were sort of taking some chances, you know, with Guardians of the Galaxy and sort of Winter Soldier and stuff. And after that, they kind of just settled in on stuff, but this feels
Ragnarok,
like Marvel.
Ragnarok.
Oh, Ragnarok. Yes. Okay. I mean,
like, I think they're still taking chances. I think just they were finishing up, like the and we talked about this back when like the first Avengers movie came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Avengers movies have to be a thing.
Yes.
They can't take chances because they have too many moving pieces.
Right.
And so I think because it's been so long since we've had anything, and the last two things we got were essentially just Avengers pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Like it felt a little stoic, but like at the same hand, we're about to get, you know, Sam Raimi doing a Doctor Strange movie. We're gonna get
yes.
another Thor movie. So I think that they're totally playing in the change and the risk movement again. I just think timing fucked it up for feeling.
Fair enough. I'm more just talking about like my sort of internal feeling about it
sure.
rather than anything actual.
No, I get that.
Yeah. But it's really nice to see something from them again that gets back to that sort of thing that I really enjoyed a few years ago with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right.
So take that, Scorsese.
Yeah. I just, again, like, I just enjoying the hell out of it so far. I think 30 minutes is good.
Yeah, I wouldn't want like an hour of these episodes. It just wouldn't work as well. They would feel stretched out and sluggish, I think.
Yeah, and that's why I was a little weird. I guess that it is only 9. Like, I felt like if they're going to do only 30-minute episodes, it would be twice as long.
Mm-hmm. But no.
But no.
Yes. And I have one thing I really love is that we have, I mean, Marvel always hires like really good actors.
Yeah.
But because of the strictures of the genre, they don't get to like really sort of, I mean, they're playing certain roles.
Yeah.
But this I feel like Olsen and Bettany get to do all kinds of things.
Like, they can get to play it straight. Oh, God, and they're proving they're so good at it.
Yeah. Like, Bettany and Olsen as like, because I rewatched the first episode, and just watching the sort of the back and forth dialogue as they're trying to figure out what the heart means on the calendar. It is, I mean, it just snaps and works. Like, the rhythms they get are so good, and it's just a joy to see.
And the whole magic show bit.
I love the constant sort of reactions, like, oh, and then pulling off like a dumb illusion, and the audience is like, this was
And of course, Catherine Hahn is a gift, as always.
Jesus, is she ever? I mean, if Bettany and Olsen weren't as good as they are, I think Hahn would just steal the entire thing.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, the fact that she wasn't was kind of remarkable, right?
Yeah, exactly. When she comes in the first episode, when she comes in the back door with the whole sort of gourmet dinner ready to go. She's like, what kind of a housewife would I be if I didn't have a gourmet dinner? And then they do this like little, that Olsen and Hahn do this little routine where Olsen sort of puts her hand on Han's hips and is trying to maneuver her out the door, but she keeps on trying to stay, and it's like this little kind of choreographed dance routine. And I'm just like, these people just know how to make really good television.
They went to like sitcom camp, because there is a whole lot of like Bewitched in there, but I'd argue like physical comedy wise, they're hitting like Lucy levels, which is precisely, you know, the hardest thing to do, right? Mm-hmm,
exactly. You need Nicole Kidman for proper.
Jesus Christ. I fear the hell. Like, I will watch it because it's Sorkin. But A, Sorkin can't do comedy. Like, not that type of comedy. He's never been able to do it. So Sorkin doing like this weird like Lucy movie, this is gonna be a train wreck.
I know. I'm gonna watch it probably, but yeah, I'm a little terrified. But anyway, it's funny that with the sort of replicating sitcom beats, because I just keep on going back to some deleted scenes, and bear with me here, from season 3 of Angel. Charisma Carpenter's character Cordelia is sort of knocked into this coma, which happens to her fairly often on that show.
Huh.
And
I want to get that looked at.
You might want to stop working with Joss Whedon there, Charisma. It'll put your character in comas. Anyway, so she's sort of put into a coma, and this figure comes to visit her and says, "Here's what your life would have been like if you'd never met Angel." So it's, you know, this is the situation, and it turns out she's a huge sitcom star, and in the episode, she's just like, it just starts sort of at the very end of the sitcom of a sitcom episode, and she's waving to the live studio audience. But they had actually filmed a whole set of scenes of this sitcom, and they didn't show them because they were just really unfunny. And in the commentary, I think it might be Tim Minear doing the commentary, who basically said, "We didn't know how to write a sitcom because we were, you know, that's not our background, but we thought, how hard could it be? And it turns out it's incredibly tough. Like, you can make it all look sitcom-y, but if you can't like hit that, I think like the formula is like one laugh per 11 seconds, and not joke, but actual laugh per 11 seconds, which has to like ramp up, in this very particular rhythm and then hit an emotional beat and then drop for the next act. Like, if you can't do that, then it's going to look weird and airless and terrible. And so they said, here are the scenes. And, like, it was bizarrely bad. So every time I think about people, like, doing a sitcom, like, as a... like as a parody or like as a riff like this, I'm like, this could be really bad, but
but well, I liked the way like Legends, for instance, did it, which was the we're not trying to write the sitcom, you know, so much as just like they're trapped in this thing, so it doesn't have to move. In fact, it shouldn't quite move like a sitcom,
right? Yeah, that was good. They like the Friends parody they had was that worked really well because they weren't quite beholden to, as you say, they weren't really beholden to the rules of a sitcom. They could they could set their own pace, which was probably for the best.
Which also weirdly reminds me of you want to talk weird moves with sitcoms? There's that Scrubs episode where they have, you know, this guy's sick and he's like supposed to be like an old writer from Cheers.
Oh, right.
And it goes into like three camera. Do you remember this episode?
Vaguely. I remember seeing it, but I didn't. I wasn't paying a lot of attention for whatever
reason. Yeah, so it goes into like three camera and everything gets like, you know, bright pastel lighting and all this. But instead of doing traditional sitcom, they end up doing the beats and structures of a Brady Bunch episode.
Oh.
And I mean, it's structured like that, but they're talking about traditional sitcoms, and it was just so weird to me. That they had to know they were doing it.
Right.
But it's like, if you don't know traditional sitcoms, you might be like, oh, well, this is what a sitcom felt like. But I'm like, but Brady Bunch wasn't a sitcom. And it was like an hour show and it moved differently. And they're nailing the feel in like 15 minutes, which is surreal.
Mm-hmm.
But it also isn't what they said they were doing.
Hmm.
It's a weird struggle. Like, it's worth going back and just finding that episode because it's such an interesting bit of playing with TV on like four different levels.
Yeah. Oh, what do you remember? What season that
was? Oh, hold on. No. I can find out though fairly quick. Here we go. It's season 4, episode 17. My Life in 4 Cameras.
Cool. I'll dig it up. That sounds. Yeah, I'm not sure how I missed that. I knew about it, but now that you describe it, I'm like, maybe I haven't even seen it.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting episode just because, like I said, like it starts off kind of normal and then it becomes this weird three camera thing, and then it returns to like a dark episode of Scrubs.
Oh, okay.
Huh. And it's just it's kind of like it feels like it's all over the place if you describe it, but when you watch it, you're just like, oh, they just seamlessly move from A to B to C.
Nice. Okay, yeah, that's on my list. I need to do a proper rewatch of Scrubs anyway.
Yeah, I did one not too long ago.
Yeah. Because I don't think I've seen every episode. Like, I it's one of those shows that I would watch some episodes and then drop out and then come back. Because, I mean, this was back at that point, it was on television. So, you know, if I didn't sit down at the right time, I didn't see that Scrubs episode.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, I never watched Scrubs. Like, I'd kind of vaguely heard about it. There was this weird period where I just didn't have cable, so I'd never really watch TV.
Right.
Just because I was living in Boston, it was the 90s, you know, in college, I just didn't have cable, so I just wasn't watching TV for years, and then, like, I just kind of got used to not watching TV as much. You know, like, I'd get DVDs of shows, but I wasn't watching live TV, like, I just fell out of the habit.
Right.
For forever at that point, you know, and then after a while, I was like, well, I got cable again. You know, years and years later. And we're talking like, you know, 2005 or so at that point. Like, so 10 years later. And I would occasionally watch TV, but I'm kind of out of the appointment TV game, you know?
Yeah.
But at one point, like, I had a friend crashing on my couch. And we'd occasionally just turn on the TV because, you know, there's nothing else to do or just this background radiation. And some channel, I guess it was Comedy Central, was running Scrubs 2 episodes back to back. And what was fascinating was each time slot was running episodes in order, but they were not the same seasons. So, like, the first time slot was in, like, season 2, and the second time slot was in season 4.
Okay.
But they were running them, like, in order in season two and then in order in season four. So, like, I started watching Scrubs with my friend, and we were like, this is really fucking funny. Like, who knew? But it got really obnoxious to watch that way.
Hmm.
And, like, so we started trying to, like, you know, watch it more often than not if we were both around. And so I went out and I started renting and buying the season sets, because the show was already over at that point. And so then I watched all of it straight through. But, yeah. Behold. It was a weird way to watch the show at first.
Yeah. Yeah, I figure. Yeah, I will sit down and scrub myself. Be scrub myself.
It holds up. It is, I mean, mostly. Yeah. There are very problematic bits.
Sure.
And they admit it, and they know it. You know, but it was at the time they thought it was funny, and whatever. Also, again, I recommend the Scrubs podcast.
Right. You have recommended that to me.
Which I have not listened to in months.
Yes. I think I listened to a bit of it on your recommendation and really enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, I just fall off of podcasts.
Yeah. We have a podcast, but some podcasts that I've been enjoying, my recent foray into more Star Wars stuff, I've been listening to Star Wars Minute. It's one of those ones where the guys break down like a minute of Star Wars.
Oh no.
But they're short, like they're 5 to 10 minutes each. So it's not where they sit down and get like a dozen people over the course of an hour to talk about like the freaking Star Destroyer shot. That would be exhausting. But I've only listened to some of it because I'm not sure I want to listen to like the pod race episodes where they're like, because that's like freaking 15 minutes of screen time. So,
right.
Yeah.
There's another podcast. Hold on, I got to look up the name of it. I should recommend to you that is actually done by someone you kind of know.
Oh.
Is this it? Yes. It's called American Shadows.
Ooh, I like that name.
Yeah, and it's just these kind of weird stories of terrible things.
Hmm.
And they're like 30 minutes a pop. But they are narrated by Lauren, you know, my prose editor.
Yeah.
So, is how I heard of it.
Oh, nice. Well,
she's actually a great narrator for stuff like this. You know, she worked for How Stuff Works and did a lot of their videos and podcast stuff. So she's been kind of getting into that. Like, this is what she does now.
Oh, nice. Well, I will have to give it a listen. It's funny, I follow Lauren on Twitter, so I should.
Yeah.
You'd think I would know about this, but, you know, Twitter is
She doesn't post often.
Ah, there we go.
And, like, she mentioned it, like, a few times, but that was it.
So. Not a shameless self-promoter, our Lauren Vogelsang. Right.
Not on Twitter, at least. Over on, like, she has a professional Facebook page, and then she has her actual profile with her actual, like, full legal name.
Gotcha.
And she'll promote it more, like, obviously on the professional page, but when she bothers and remembers to hit Twitter, she'll mention stuff, but...
Ooh. So do we have anything else to say about WandaVision?
Oh, not really. Again, like, it's going to be every Friday for the next, what, there are...
7 weeks?
There's 7 weeks, 7 weeks. And I, like I said, I think as it goes, it'll get... there's more to talk about, right? Like, right now it's just a technical marvel, frankly, and a whole lot of fun.
Exactly. Yeah, and I enjoyed it. I think I might have enjoyed it more if I didn't know anything going in. I mean, there's no way that's going to happen, right? I mean,
right.
You get Marvel hype. But, you know, but the premise is fun. Everybody is more than capable of rising to the occasion.
I will say something that I saw a lot of people mentioning, and I'm just going to mention it myself, that it was really nice seeing, like, that Marvel fanfare again on something new.
I know.
Like, as silly as that is, like, you just, I mean, over the last, like, you know, like, 12 years, we've just gotten used to that happening, like, once or twice a year. So it was just kind of fun to be like, oh, yeah, this.
Oh, yeah, more Marvel. Yeah, I know, I agree. That was nice. There was one other thing I wanted to say. Oh, I really liked having... Oh, the creator of the show, Jack Schaefer, I think his name is, he actually wrote a very... and directed a very charming science fiction film called Timer with Emma Caulfield of Buffy fame, which I recommend.
Nice.
So it's like a little sci-fi romance thing where I won't get into it, but it's good. And Emma Caulfield was actually in the second episode as Dottie, the sort of the neighborhood matriarch. So, anywho. Also love the Help Me Rhonda thing segueing into the Wanda.
Oh, Jesus.
What's who's, you know, that
again,
was...
Again, like, that, like, those turns to horror are just...
Yeah. I like that. I mean, it's, what does she say? You know, I just want to fit in, and I don't mean anyone any harm. And Dottie just says, I don't
believe you.
And I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's a little weird.
Yeah, no, in the end of that second episode, with just the no, and just everything reverses. I do love that Wanda as a character is finally, after all this time, getting her due.
Yes, exactly. She really hasn't had a lot to do in the movies, aside from look angry and throw, like, red magic around, so this is good.
Yeah.
This is
nice. And again, it gives me hope for, like, the Marvel TV shows. Like, you know, Feige knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Still, I guess, is the important part. Still.
Right. Also, I've discovered in looking at Star Wars stuff, when you say, just reminded me because you said Feige, people who, like, watch and talk about Clone Wars, they don't talk about Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau. They talk about Dave and John.
Yes.
And Rosario, and like they use first name like they know these people.
I know. Oh, so speaking of, so you know, I only watched like the first like episode or so of the second season of Mandalorian, and I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Someone recut the big like Luke, you know, coming in scene, and added the audio and timed it out for I Need a Hero.
Yeah, I have not.
So I actually saw the scene.
Right.
Because I watched it, I was like, oh, I'll watch this, and I saw the scene, I was like. Okay, like, I don't know that I want to watch the show, but I kind of want to watch the show now. Like, that just, for some reason, that just worked. But now I'm also like, if I watch it, though, it's not going to have that music, so I'm not going to like it as much. Like, it's...
exactly. Like, what are you going to do? It's just going to have some Star Wars-y music.
Yeah. But I just like the, you know, like, oh, an X-Wing. Yeah, we're safe now. Like, it was really well done, I will say.
Yeah. I believe it. You mean the scene itself, or the
scene cutting? Itself.
Oh yeah, no, they do a good job. Right up until Luke takes his hood off, and then you get like,
sure,
like terrifying 90s CGI Luke, it's actually not that bad. But there's only so much they can do with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I kind of auto forgive that.
Yeah, exactly. I like that phrase, auto forgive. Another thing. Speaking of watching people. React to things because I don't know why I do this, but I do. I watch those videos. It came up on my YouTube recommendations, so it's people watching Person of Interest.
Before you begin, can I just tell you that like I think I've only ever watched one, the reaction video thing to people watching stuff. There's only one scene I think I've ever watched people react to.
What's that?
That's the Cap getting the hammer.
Oh yeah, people get people
because it right. Well, and the like just from that movie, right? Like you know, yeah. Straight through to like everyone coming back. But I've never watched like reaction video stuff. I've never tried it. So please tell me more.
No, I mean, I don't know. It's I just enjoy it. Sometimes they're well done. So, and sometimes they're terrible.
Sure.
Oh, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, it sounded like you dropped out. My internet is sticky today. I've been watching. This is one guy, Jimmy Makram, who's been watching Person of Interest. So I didn't watch all of his reaction videos because, you know, I don't think I need to do that. But you know, just dropping in for some of the big moments and
sure
what he thinks. But my YouTube recommendations began to fill up with a Person of Interest reaction videos. And I have discovered something. Maybe it's just based on the algorithms, but there are two audiences for Person of Interest.
Okay.
If you just go by reaction videos, lesbians and black men. It is really
weird.
Those
were two huge slices of the audience. Yes.
Yeah. Because I mean, I mean the, you know, lesbians obviously because of Root and Shaw, but there's a lot of them, and watching some of them, it's like they're not just there for Root and Shaw. These people are fully invested in the show, and like they're just absolutely in love with like Harold, whatever, and Bear mostly.
But
they're really, really into it. Bear obviously, what's also fascinating is that in the same, a lot of these videos are from 2016,
right.
So a lot of these people are also watching the one, the 100 season 3, which is the season in which Lexa, character Lexa dies immediately after sleeping with Clark. So
they're just setting themselves up for hurt across the board.
Yep. So, okay.
Message each of these people and be like, go watch Winona Earp right after, it makes them feel better? Can we just do that?
No, a lot of them have also watched Winona Earp.
I figured, you know, but like, go back, watch Lost Girl. Like, just soothe the pain.
Yeah. Precisely. Go watch some gay people that don't die immediately. Yeah, and the thing is, like, I watched, like, when you're watching it, like, in season 5, like, Shaw doesn't actually reunite with the crew until episode 9.
Yeah.
And then Root dies, like, literally the next episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually have not watched the reactions to, like, episode 10, because I don't need to see people being that crushed, essentially.
Right. Yeah, that's just torture point at that point, right?
Yeah, so what I did was actually I just sort of watched them react to the final episode, in which they sort of share their thoughts on that, and they're actually quite forgiving. Compared to like the 100, which is much more sort of seemed gratuitous and nasty. But I just thought it was really weird that there are these two very specific audiences for the show. And not a surprise, but...
Sure.
Yeah. That's cool to see.
Yeah. No, it really is. Well, we're close to the hour-ish mark. We could stop here if we'd like.
I think we could. The only other thing that I saw that I was wanting to talk about was the movie Synchronic.
Oh, yeah.
Which I saw last night. And I've been looking forward to this for some time. It's as Anthony Mackie and Jamie Dornan. They play EMTs in Louisiana, which is an important plot point for the story. And they start coming across these inexplicable kind of injuries and deaths. And eventually they figure out, or at least Mackie figures out, that it's this drug, designer drug called Synchronic, which if you're young and you take it and your pineal gland isn't all like old and calcified, it will actually send you back in time. It sort of unmoors you from time for a period of around 7 minutes. But as people discover, going back into the past, especially if you're not a white guy, will almost certainly get you in a heap of trouble. So
right.
things go poorly. Like it transpires that Jamie Dornan's character, his daughter Brianna, takes Synchronic and essentially vanishes. Now Dornan doesn't know about it, but Mackie begins to figure it out, and Mackie has like a tumor on his pineal gland. He's going to die, but it means that he actually can use Synchronic, and he has basically the last stash of the stuff in the world. And he begins to experiment with trying to figure out how to get back there, find his friend's daughter, and return. But every time he does, I mean, it's just basically him running from, like, you know, like Louisiana clan or, you know, or conquistadors or whatever else, and then coming
right.
back and figuring out, you know, the next step, all the while his supplies are dwindling. And it's funny because I read some reviews of Synchronic before when I first heard about it, and they were sort of a little bit, they're kind of middling. And I was like, I don't care, because I really like the filmmakers, Moorhead and Benson are their names, and they've done a couple of films. The last one they did was called The Endless, which is on Netflix.
Okay.
Two brothers who sort of return to like a sort of a cult or intentional community that they escaped from as when they were young, but they discover that the thing that the cult members are kind of worshiping is essentially this anomaly of physics that is trapping everybody there. And it's a fascinating film. Nice. So I thought, hey, this will be great. But it is a little scattered. I feel like they had too many ideas to cram in there. Like they wanted to talk about systemic racism, and they wanted to like to have like a time travel thriller, and they wanted to have this sort of like very personal story about these buddies and their lives, and it doesn't quite add up.
Did they think of like simplifying it and making it about people giving birth to kittens?
If only.
That's like my new plot solution.
If you could have the women just give birth to a bunch of kittens, I think you could have something there. You should be like a network executive. That should be your only.
That's thing. All I'm ever going to suggest.
You'd be like John Peters with like the mechanical spider note. You'll be like Adam Nave and the like women giving birth to kittens note.
Yeah. Yeah, but it'll totally be like, you know, but this is a Back to the Future sequel. Sure, but hear me out.
What if he goes back in time and women are giving birth to kittens and he has to cuddle them all? Oh, yeah, well.
Anyway, I'm sorry, you were saying.
That's right. What if person of interest, but the machine was a woman who gave birth to kittens?
What if it was kitten of interest? Hear me out.
That's right. What if every week
the machine is just a box of kittens?
and it tells Reese and Finch to go find women who are giving birth to kittens, so it can get them and bring them back and put more kittens in the box. and Samaritan is a bunch of like puppies in a box. Anyway.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
I'm not. Yeah, I can see it.
Here's $3 million.
Go do something. Go do something with a box and some kittens.
Go see a Star Wars.
Go see a Star Wars. Anywho, yeah, that's a whole thing. So Synchronic. It's got its flaws, but it certainly fed some particular sort of like need in me for a very particular kind of like low key science fiction film.
Sure.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, watch it if you got an afternoon.
I will.
Cool.
And yeah. No. Anyway. And with that, we shall play some music. I think.
Do-lo-lo-lo-lo.
Do-lo-lo-lo. Music.
Music.